This is Under the Tree, a seminar on freedom with Bill Ayers.
Welcome back to Under the Tree. We're here for a special and very abbreviated election edition of the podcast today. We're joined by Stephanie Scora of Girl I Guess, a progressive voter guide, and Charles Preston, Community Engagement Manager at Injustice Watch. Injustice Watch is a nonprofit newsroom investigating the Cook County court system, and they are known for their comprehensive judicial guide that no one should head to the polls without. Like many parts of the country, Cook County faces many questions on the ballots particular to our region, such as the Bring Chicago Home initiative, as well as international crises that affect us and our votes. Like our friends in Michigan who initiated the uncommitted vote, people in Illinois are deciding whether to vote for Joe Biden or leave a blank space to express their anger and unwillingness to support the administration's handling of the ongoing genocide in Palestine. There's so much going into this one ballot. So without further ado, please listen in and here's our discussion.
Stephanie Scora, Girl I Guess Progressive Voter Guide. Welcome back to Under the Tree.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me back.
It's
glad we were able to make it work.
I'm so glad we made it work because every time an election comes around, my heart and my head turn toward you. And you're the most trustworthy voice in Chicago on the matters of voting. So thank you so much for joining us for a short update.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Looking forward to an election in a couple of weeks. We just wanted to get your take on what's important, what you're looking at, and what you're telling your progressive sisters and brothers to do this time around.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think this is a really strange election for a lot of reasons. Voters are very deactivated. People are not enthusiastic, especially because, you know, what has been playing out in front of the public for months now is the federal government ignoring the wishes of not just their own base for the Democratic Party, but the will of the vast majority of voters. People are not excited about Biden. People that we know are not excited about Trump. And so there's just really a lack of enthusiasm. And I think in particular in Chicago, people are election doubt, right? This is our fifth election in 18 months. This is our fifth election in 18 months. And, you know, that is, that's a lot of voting even for me. So, you know, it is, and we've got another one in November. So we're still feeling the ripple effect of the 2022 primary being delayed to June. Is people, you know, folks aren't having it. There's no big sexy office on the ballot because people are deactivated around the presidential race. And what we're seeing across the county is there are not very many contested elections. I think there were fewer than 40 contested races covered in the guide. And, you know, it was, it's really, really interesting to see just even the way that campaigns are moving. We're 11 days out from an election. Any other election season in Chicago, you would see the streets littered with campaign signs in the common way. And even though we have a Supreme Court justice race, even though we have a contested race for two countywide offices, even though we have contested congressional elections, you're really not seeing very much participation in the political process in public from people. And that means that voters are uninformed, voters are unaware, voters are deactivated. And that's really dangerous because one of my mantras is always that, you know, a progressive voter is an informed voter and an informed voter is a progressive voter. But this is a very low information, low enthusiasm, low turnout election that we're looking at happening in just a couple weeks.
Yeah, I'm hearing you, and I think that you make an excellent point. I would add one thing to it around the kind of stepping back and alienation, and that is the Gaza war.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Really pissed people off, and it's making them step back from, to the extent that there's political engagement, it's on the streets, and it doesn't translate in people's minds to this upcoming election. I think I may be wrong, but that's how it
is. That's exactly what I'm talking about. People have lost faith in the political process because they are seeing the federal government enable our tax dollars to be spent on death and war and apartheid. And you know, used to commit a genocide against the Palestinian people. And our government is doing nothing to stop it. In fact, they're encouraging it. And
exactly. They're the enablers. And it is really, I have to say just one note on that, which is that the courage of the Palestinian community and JVP and Palestinian student groups have really brought this to the fore in a rapid way. And I'm so impressed with their courage and their relentlessness. And hopefully it's going to make a difference. And that remains to be seen. But let's pivot and talk about the upcoming race, because there are a couple of contested races. And I know that the Guide has an opinion about all this.
So let's
start with state's attorney.
Oh my gosh. Well, this is, you know, you could not have a more clear cut choice. It is very, very rare that we have the opportunity to say without any level of exaggeration that one of these candidates is good and the other one is just bad news. You know, Clayton Harris is not as progressive as Kim Fox. He's not pretending to be, but he's a good guy. He cares about community. He cares about people. He is a Black man with Black sons, which I feel like is important to note, especially in the current climate in the state's attorney's race. He knows what it's like to be racially profiled. He knows what it's like to live in a community that's been disinvested from. He knows what impact the law has on people when it is improperly applied or implied without a mind for justice. And, you know, he's going to do some stuff that we don't like because he's running for state's attorney. And, you know, folks like us don't think that that position should exist, much like the sheriff. But, you know, he is far and away the best choice for this office. And on the other hand, we have somebody who is fundamentally dishonest, who has spent, you know, the better part of 25 years showing her face, showing her values, showing her commitment to things that are anti-democratic, that are anti-Black, that are anti-gay, that are anti-woman. You know, Eileen O'Neill Burke, I don't really call people pure evil, but she's about as close as you can get in this race to somebody who is really just, she is the opposite of everything that she says that she is. And she is truly running what I am calling a Paul Vallis style campaign, where what she is trying to do is actively deceive voters into believing that she is somebody that she's not. But if you're able to peel back the curtain, what you see is it's very, very plain. Her biggest backers are Republicans. Her campaign treasurer is a Republican. Her campaign manager from her last judicial election was a Republican. She has donated to Republican candidates in the past. Her husband has donated to Republican candidates in the past. She is backed by some of the worst people in this state and in this county. And she is trying to overwhelm progressives in this race with conservative fundraising and bogus talking points. She's resting on her laurels about this choice protection unit that she's going to have in the state's attorney's office. First of all, Roe v. Wade is still the law of the land in Illinois. The Patient Provider Protection Act passed a couple of years ago. So we don't need the Cook County State's Attorney's Office to have a choice protection unit. That's what the Attorney General is for, because these are state laws. She's not going to be enforcing county laws. And, you know, yes, it's state's attorney, but I would look to Kwame Raoul for that. Rather than to the county office. And also, her backers are anti-choice extremists. Her backers are pro-forced birth, and she's trotting out this ridiculous idea of, you know, a choice protection unit and pretending like that makes her, you know, the most progressive or the most feminist candidate in this race when she keeps shacking up with Republicans. And we all know where they stand on this issue. So
she's very, very law and order, and she's running that kind of campaign. So yeah. You heard it here for state's attorney, Clayton Harris. Check. That's girl, I guess, giving us good advice on the state's attorney race. Let me ask you a second.
Clayton Harris, far and away.
Check. You know, I agree with you about, you know, state's attorneys, district attorneys are not our people. And you know that my son was the district attorney of San Francisco. And when I donated to his campaign, I said, can't wait till you're elected so I can denounce you. But I didn't need to. We went after him. But okay, so that's one in the bag. Clayton Harris, we really want him to win. He's no Kim Fox, but he's light years difference from the opponent. So second one I want to ask you about is the presidential race, because I was so impressed with both Michigan and Minnesota coming in just with unprecedented numbers, saying to Joe Biden, not just Muslim Americans or Arab Americans, but young people, people of color, no thank you on your war, your genocidal war in Gaza. What should we do in Illinois?
Well, and I also want to shout out North Carolina there. You know, North Carolina doesn't get a lot of love, but they also had over 10% uncommitted on Super Tuesday.
I didn't even know that. That's fantastic.
So, and what you're seeing in these states, right, we have high numbers, Black electorate, Muslim electorate, Arab electorate, you know, Minnesota and Michigan, two of the most populous Arab and Muslim states in the country. Illinois, of course, is also up there. There's a lot of civic education that needs to be done on this issue, just around how it functions in an election. We do not have an uncommitted option on the ballot in Illinois. So we cannot do what Michigan and Minnesota did. It's just not how our elections work. So I am working with a coalition of Muslim, Arab, and Palestinian groups to ask folks to do one of two things for the presidential race in the whole state. One is write in Gaza. If you have a write-in option and you want to cast a write-in vote, write in Gaza. I've been hearing a lot from election judges. Some folks are saying, please don't do this. It'll cause us a lot of extra work. Some folks are saying, well, actually, the county updated how the ballot counting process works. So the ballot machines now count the write-in votes, and all the election judges have to do is decide which ones are valid. So, you know, it may actually be a situation where we can FOIA and see the number of Gaza votes. Wow. I'm still not 100% clear on that. I don't know if that's possible. I'm looking into that, because one of the things that I do not have 100% knowledge on is just sort of the arcane minutia of how the votes are actually counted by the election judges and by the voting machines. Mm-hmm. But I've heard some pretty encouraging stuff from election judges online in direct communication with me over the last couple of days. The other option for folks who don't have a write-in in some counties where there's no write-in, or who just don't want to take the chance of writing something in, I would note there's no chance you're not going to invalidate your ballot. But for folks who just don't feel comfortable casting a write-in vote, the other ask is to leave it blank. Do not vote for president. And the point here is we want to see a drop-off in the votes cast for Joe Biden versus the total ballots cast in this state. We want to be able to say, hey, look, 3% of people voted for Marianne Williamson, 2% of people voted for Dean Phillips. Maybe, you know, Biden might get 80, 90% of the vote in this election, but we want to see the raw vote total be hopefully a couple hundred thousand below his vote share or above his vote share. We want to be able to take that number and say, these are all folks who might have voted for you last time that you have since alienated with your uncritical support for Israel's genocide in Gaza. And we will not stand for that. And because we chose not to vote for you in the primary, we don't know how we're going to vote in November. You know, we're certainly not threatening to vote for Trump, but we are not happy with the way that Biden has run his administration on this issue specifically.
I think hugely important point, because it's a low risk vote, and it has It's a no risk vote, and it has possibly real consequences in terms of waking people up. So I am delighted to write in Gaza. I will do that. Appreciate the advice. One last race I want to ask you about. Go ahead, Roxana.
I think also we do want to point out that the DNC is coming to Chicago. So having, you know, either a blank or Gaza write-in option to a state that's always presumed to automatically be Democratic, automatically supporting the Democratic candidate, or particularly the Democratic president, to suddenly have a much higher ratio of voters saying, let's hold on now, I think is a real powerful statement.
Exactly. Well, and you know, Reagan and I have not decided what we're going to recommend that folks do in November exactly for that reason. I mean, let's be real. Whether it's Joe Biden, whether they switch him out for somebody else at the convention, whatever, the Democratic nominee for president is going to win the state of Illinois in November. That is, there are no foregone conclusions in politics, but it's a pretty safe bet that the Democrat is going to win Illinois in November. Because of that, we have an opportunity to say, we are not like, let's be real. Let's be real about how this process works. Because of how the Electoral College functions, our votes in dark blue states do not count. It is irrelevant. It does not matter how the three of us vote for president. The outcome in this state is pretty much a given. Now, if there were a national popular vote, every single vote would matter. But the reality of the situation is Cook County is so deep blue. The collar counties are getting bluer every year. There is almost no chance that the Democrat loses the state of Illinois, which means we, as principled progressives and leftists, have the opportunity to vote our conscience in November rather than vote out of some obligation of guilt or fear of a Trump presidency. Because what we know is this state is not going to be the tipping point state.
Right. Right. I think you're right. I think we have an opportunity. And as another way of saying it is we have an obligation because this genocide is going on. Our government is the enabler. Mm-hmm. Our tax dollars are killing Palestinian people. We should stop it. And I think you've given us great advice. So I'm writing in Gaza tomorrow. Thank you. The other one that I wanted to ask you about, and you may have others you'd like to mention, but is Bring Chicago Home.
Yes.
The ballot initiative. Could you say a word about that and how a girl, I guess, is thinking about that?
Yeah, you know, this is another really cut and dry one. We actually gave a last minute golden shrug, which is our super endorsement, to the Bring Chicago Home ballot initiative. If folks got to vote for this. People also have to keep in mind, we're not going to pass a law by voting for this. This is not California. We don't govern by referendum. But this is very cut and dry. For 99% of people who purchase property in the city of Chicago, our transfer tax will decrease. It will go from 0.75% to 0.6%. Now, at the end of the day, that might mean a couple hundred dollars in your real estate transaction in the grand scheme of things. You know, if you're buying property, a few hundred dollars or even a thousand or two, it's not going to make or break a deal in most cases, because we're generally, you're talking multiples of thousands in those cases. But that money is still money back in the pocket of middle income and low income taxpayers who are interested in obtaining the stability that buying property brings. For 1% of folks who buy property in this city, it will mean that they pay a little bit more in tax. Properties that are over $1.12 million in value will experience a property tax increase. Now, the language is $1 million or less will see a decrease, and $1 million to $1.5 million and then $1.5 million and up will see an increase. But the way that the math actually works out, because it's an incremental tax, it's a bracketed tax, same with federal income, the first $1 million of any property purchase will have a lower tax. And then the next $500,000 will have an incrementally higher tax, which means that if you work out the math, properties worth $1,120,000 and below will pay the same or less in their transfer tax than they would before this ordinance was passed. The funds that are raised from this ordinance for the city of Chicago, the city estimates to going to be about $100 million a year, will be legally required to go into a fund specifically designated for alleviating homelessness and housing insecurity in the city of Chicago with a broad lens. What that means is building affordable housing. What that means is building shelters, funding programs, healthcare, job programs, food programs, anything that has anything to do with houselessness and housing insecurity is going to be funded through this tax. And ultimately, the real estate lobby is spending big, big money trying to push back on this. They're threatening to raise people's rents. They're saying it's going to be an increase in property tax. They're saying it's going to be an increase on renters. It's bogus. It's a lie. There's no reason, you know, unless you're talking about the most greedy of landlords, which, you know, landlords, but only the most greedy of landlords will raise their tenants' rent because of this. And I actually do the math in the guide on this. Even if, let's take a pie in the sky example. Let's say you spend $20 million to purchase a building with this new tax or under this new tax, and that building has 100 residents in it. The amount that you would pay in taxes will just push your profit margin later into the same year vis-a-vis the current tax. You know, you're only going to pay a couple hundred thousand dollars more in taxes on a building worth $20 million. And at that point, if you are a developer, if you're a flipper, if you're one of those fancy pants real estate people who buys million-dollar properties all the time, if you can't afford this tax, you can't afford the building.
Got it. So let's at this point remind people how they can see the full guide. How can they get to Girl, I Guess, Progressive Voter Guide?
It's very simple. It's just girliguess.com. If that isn't working for you, you can go to my website, stephaniescora.com/voter guide, and click on the big button there that says read the latest edition of Girl, I Guess. Or you can just go to the homepage on stephaniescora.com. There's a button there too. Or you could check out my social media at stephaniescora on pretty much every platform. I'll have posted the link to the guide, our digital palm card, and other information that you need to know as a voter. But it's out there. Use it. Send it to your friends. Send it to your family. Make sure that people are as informed as possible, because an informed voter is a progressive voter.
I just think it's so important to push Stephanie Scora's buttons. And there are big buttons there. Everyone go on and push those buttons and find out what's going on. I can't thank you enough for your time and for your wisdom and for keeping me informed. And I think many, many other folks know what to do because of your, you know, diligent hard work. Thank you so much.
Thank you all for having me. I really appreciate it.
Justice Watch is a nonprofit newsroom, nonpartisan, non-advocacy, but we do projects, investigative projects relating to the Cook County court system. So mainly all the investigative journalism that we do is centered on the Cook County courts. Every election, we have a judicial voting guide because we feel as though voters should be very informed about judges, since they completely like take over the ballot. Like, you get your ballot, it's about like 60 something judges on there every time. And so there's a lot of things people don't know about the judiciary, such as the fact like right now we have the March 19th primaries, and these are for vacant positions in Cook County judicial systems. We're talking about the sub circuits, the Supreme Court as well, the Illinois Supreme Court as well. I know folks will also be voting on state's attorney for the Democratic primary. But yeah, we have open positions for judges, and then in November we vote on retention. So judges who retain office And so, it's two times this year. And so, like, what Injustice Watch wants to do is make sure that every Cook County voter has the information that they need in order to vote for judges. And so, like, what we do is we provide all that information to them.
And where can people get the voter guide?
Good question. So injusticewatch.org/checkyourjudges is our digital guide, but we've also been delivering the guide all over Cook County. We're actually coming out with like a map of like where folks can pick up the guide. This ranges from gas stations to coffee shops to libraries all over Cook County. And so, various number of places. And we try to, like, this year we really try to hone in on contested sub-circuits. So I think, like, the 15th, the 19th, these are contested races, meaning that there are more than one judge going up for, like, an open vacancy. And, more than one candidate going up for an open vacancy. So, we try to hone in on those spaces. And so, like, prepare to see a map. Just go to injusticewatch.org or look us up on Twitter or Instagram, and prepare to see the many places in which you can also pick up our guide.
And so people will be educated about the candidates, and you dig into research and give us facts about the candidates. Is that it?
Yeah, facts such as, like, you know, past controversies, like really things that you need to know in terms of their background, their affiliations to like different community organizations, who they've been endorsed by, their salary, were they a former public defender, were they a former prosecutor?
Great.
All that information is within that guide, and I think it really helps people not go in there blindly and basically vote by name, which everyone admits that they do. It's like, right. This is a woman. I'm for women's rights. Bam. Oh, his last name is Jones or Jackson. Must be black. Bam. You know, so like it's just that's how it folds. But we know that, sometimes our biases like tend to lead us astray. And it's always good to have great information. And so like one of the things voters can do is just easily go on to injusticewatch.org/checkyourjudges. And you can fill out a sample ballot and take that ballot with you into the poll booth.
Right.
And then, it'll be so much easier then.
Yeah. I think so many judges often discourages people. And we were talking to Girl, I guess, earlier, and she was saying that people are also electioned out. That is, there have been so many elections and people are kind of, their eyes are slowly closing. Is that your experience? And how do we wake ourselves up?
Oh, it's definitely bad. I'll say voter apathy. I think I feel it way more, especially as times politically heighten, as we are now, with everything that's going on in terms of Gaza, how the economy looks, where your average person say the economy's bad, the prices are bad, but then you got your government saying, well, we're keeping down inflation. So it's like these are very, I think, peculiar political times. And I'm definitely like seeing voter apathy or just the lack of, and you could just tell with other organizations, just looking across at other nonprofits, like who is doing GOTV work, you know, who is getting people engaged around elections. You don't really see that type of organizing as prevalent as it used to be, right? Now you see more folks trying to get, people going to the root causes or trying to address root causes of issues, outside of explicitly doing like voter registration or educating people about the vote. And in my opinion, I think we need all of it, right? We still need organizations to inform people about the political processes and these people we want to elect in office that we have no clue about. Because at the end of the day, these are people who are put in positions of power and they do have a big effect on people's lives. Like I tell people all the time, judges, it's probably the one political official that you will meet at some point in your life, if you want to divorce, if you want to get married, if you want to sue a doctor for malpractice, if you get caught up with a traffic ticket, if you have a criminal court case, if you want to, you know, have a restraining order put on someone, if you have a child custody battle, you know, these people, I used to tell my friends, right, and I came from a community organizing background and one that is very much, you know, dealing with, you know, the prison industrial complex. You know, whenever someone gets locked up, it's always free this person, free that person. When we really have the name of the person who put them there, we have that information. We know who they are, you know? And so what does that be for us to like and not even engage with the fact that we know who these people are? And we do have information on them. But there's still this hesitancy to engage, you know, the judicial part of the government establishment as we do the others. Right. I say, like, it's a shame that we know about national politics. We know about Biden and we know about Trump. But when it comes to our communities and who is okaying evictions and who is locking people up or people who probably these candidates and judges do reside in our communities, we have no idea.
Yeah, I what I hear you saying is really a theme on this podcast, and that is, you may not be interested in politics, but politics is interested in you. So you ought to wake up and get out there and participate.
Exactly. I think you lose nothing by being informed about judges. And me, I'm a person, I work for a non-advocacy organization. I don't even, and in my personal life, I don't even advocate for people to vote. What I do advocate for is for people to be informed. Like, know who has the power, know what their powers are, because I think, when we have information, not only does it, you know, help ourselves in our personal lives, but it helps us contribute to society better. It helps us organize better. It helps us be more imaginative and more inventive in, like, what we can do. And so, like, the education for me has always been key, and I think at Injustice Watch, you know, that is our primary goal in terms of the Cook County court system. We really want to expose, like, institutional failures about the Cook County court system, but also highlight, you know, the powers of judges and what they are responsible for.
You know, I really appreciate the work, and I just want to congratulate you all for doing it, because I do think that if we don't pay attention or we're not educated or become apathetic or we get kind of pushed out of the system, that's how we end up with a political class and political leaders who represent the money people rather than all of us. So I appreciate that. Appreciate what you're doing.
Most definitely. Most definitely. And I love talking. I love even like thinking about judges more. Because before I landed at Injustice Watch, it's something I really didn't think about. You know, I really didn't think about courts in the way that I do in terms of it tying to a larger system. And how it's still affected by, you know, governments and government decisions. And even like, you know, the organizing that people do today in terms of abolishing cash bail, when Illinois did that, what it did essentially was put more power into judges, you know? Mm-hmm. And now judges have to decide, you know, the threat level of said person coming out of jail. They are also responsible for putting people on electronic monitoring,
right?
How long they sentence people. So like when you start to really think about, you know, the power and effect that judges have, you think like, well, I'm voting for these people. These people also like host fundraisers in our community or like are, you know, good, have good relationships with probably fellow business folks in your community. It really points to, you know, something that is deeply like local that I think people should start to consider more. Like you should start to consider your neighbors and your local organizing landscape and spaces.
Love that. Charles, I can't thank you enough for your time. We were thinking maybe in the fall, before the fall election, we have a live event and maybe you'll join us and we'll talk about voting. We'll talk about election. We'll try to educate people over at Co-Prosperity Sphere or someplace like that. You down for that?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Okay, man. So look forward to it, and go out and vote, and we will talk soon.
All right. Peace to you.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Okay, folks, let's give thanks that we're alive and dancing the dialectic at this exact moment on the clock of the universe. Let's look unblinkingly at the society as it is, and let's get busy in projects to reimagine, repair, and rebuild this broken world. Let's try to stay all the way human.
Thanks to Damon Williams and Daniel Kisslinger at the generative and provocative podcast Ergo, co-conspirators Roxana Espos and Palace Shaw.
With joy in my heart and freedom on my mind, until next time.